And welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Claire Wiley.
And I'm Seth Arnes.
And today in studio, we have Luke Carton, who is going to be starting the show off with us. He is the Director of Lands and Sustainability for Park City. So his voice is very familiar to us here at KPCW. But today we are going to be talking about Mountain Towns 2030. Luke, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, Luke, I know we've had you on the show before to talk about Mountain Towns 2030 and some of the initiatives that you have. But just in case some of our listeners aren't familiar, why don't you give us a little bit of a background on yourself, why you launched Mountain Towns 2030, and a little bit about this solutions framework that you have developed?
Yeah, happy to. I can tell I've been on KPCW enough because you guys actually get my job title right. I don't even get my job title right. You know, Mountain Towns was actually born in Park City back in 2019. And the concept was, when I look across kind of the Mountain West, there's over 70 peer communities that are small mountain towns. Some of them are resort driven. Some of them are just, you know, mountain towns. And we're all fighting very similar issues. It's a pretty unique concept to say, hey, we live in these beautiful areas. We have a lot of folks that have moved to these beautiful areas because they're gorgeous. It ties to that kind of deeper feeling of being connected to the land, feeling that kind of power of the mountains around you. And then they're also having similar issues and fighting kind of the same fight, everything from, you know, the issues of tourism and kind of major drivers of economies to the kind of core pieces of everything from water issues to wildfire to, hey, how can we be a town of, you know, a few hundred to a few thousand people and address these issues. So the interesting thing is, you know, we're all just like a lot of these mountain communities, that there's a lot of things that need to get done with limited resources and limited kind of brain power. So the great thing of Mountain Towns was saying, hey, could we actually learn from each other of what others are doing? And truthfully rip off the best ideas that we could bring here and also share the ideas that we're doing in Park City and share them outwards too. So a great example is, it's almost taking that leadership Park City mentality of, hey, let's go learn from some of our peer communities. And it expands it even broader to across the West. We even have communities that are participating from Canada as far away as Japan now and Europe as well, because it's again, very, very similar issues. And also they're good people, right? They're all kind of that driven, want to be outside, want to connect with folks, and are excited about what they're doing. I mean, we get to work in some pretty unique and beautiful areas. So sharing these information and solutions is key. So back in 2019, we hosted a conference in Park City up at the Santee. And then we also brought in Jane Goodall, and then also Paul Hawken, who wrote you talked about Project Drawdown, and that's out of it too. And his book Drawdown was a key concept of what we kind of built this on. But the goal was bringing all these folks together and starting to share everything from, you know, energy policy and dealing with utilities to regenerative agriculture, wildfire issues, water issues, that again, not just Park City is fighting, but places like Jackson or Laramie or Bozeman or, you know, up in the Sun Valley area, tons of places in Colorado, down to Taos. When you start talking to these folks, they're fighting the same thing of everything from affordability to energy policy to, you know, engaging the populace, and also just not doing this on a study level, but just saying, how can we actually change people's lives for the better?
I'm glad you brought up that last point, talking about that these small communities face all sorts of different problems, from energy to climate impacts to housing. In some ways, some of these mountain communities that you're talking about in Mountain Towns 2030 and rural communities around the West, they're facing both rural community problems and in some cases big city problems as well. And that's, I think, one of the challenges for smaller under-resourced communities. I know Mountain Towns was started by, you know, yourself and Park City, and Park City is probably one of the more well-resourced communities amongst these mountain communities. How have you worked to engage with other rural communities in the mountains that maybe aren't quite as well-resourced as towns like Park City or an Aspen or a Jackson?
Yeah, 100%. So the great thing, again, is because just bringing these folks together, you get people from diverse backgrounds. And that's what kind of draws people to their various towns and city councils as well. We have folks that have There used to be a town council member from Missoula that actually had background in like literally launching satellites, like space level stuff. And that was interesting to talk to him about as we looked at quantifying forest health. He was able to actually able to be able to pull us into NASA and researchers that were doing some things with infrared to be able to start saying, hey, is there a way to quantify, dug fir kill or beetle kill in other areas? Is there a way to tap into folks that have, financing backgrounds that are often drawn to different communities? Town of Ridgeway, Colorado is a great example of, John, the mayor down there, John Clark, and his entire town council, Terry and that whole team, has really just kind of said, hey, the great thing about being these small communities is it's not that we're under-resourced. We can actually move faster than the big cities can. I think every job anyone you ever talk to is being like, gosh, we're under-resourced, right? But I think the way to flip it on its head is just being like, we don't have the issues that a New York City or even a Salt Lake City has. We actually have, some great tailwinds of, wow, we have a community that actually cares about the environment because you can't get away from it from what's around you too. So to dive in and say, hey, let's use Main Street as a great example. Hey, we have a historic Main Street, which is awesome. It's beautiful. It doesn't make us feel like a soulless clone of another mountain town. But the challenge of it is we don't have a place to put garbage. We have issues with delivery trucks going up and down the streets. And again, that's just the core kind of pinning of being a community, right? We have restaurants and stores and all these other things. So as an example, we're learning right now from Breckenridge and Teton Village and all these other folks of trying to take some of those logistics and moving those off of Main Street. And you might say, well, what's that have to do with the climate side of it? And the great thing is, actually has a lot to do with it. To get climate out of talking about tons of carbon, people don't talk about that in their normal life or truthfully probably annually. But the big thing is when you start saying, hey, the impacts of noise and air pollution and trash and food waste, those are all felt very locally. Transportation is always a reoccurring, it's the greatest hit that keeps on giving. But again, when you tie that back to being like, all right, how can we solve this? When you look at our multi-use pathways and all this other stuff and the explosive growth of e-bikes, not in the concept of recreation, but people using it to replace their cars. These are all good challenges to have. And again, talking to other communities to see what they've done and also sharing both the challenges and wins we have here.
Can you give a few examples of how Mountain Towns 2030 has helped bring resources to some of these under-resourced communities, especially with what you were talking about there, with specific examples of knowledge sharing that helps other communities not reinvent the wheel?
Yeah, we'll dive into a big one that we're actually going through right now with the Utah Clean Energy Act and the Utah Renewable Communities piece. So just to bring everyone up to speed, there are going to be up to 16 Utah communities that are sharing resources on driving the First in the Nation style program to bring folks a competitive renewable energy portfolio. So let's take a step back, right? Data centers are all in the news these days. And again, we don't need to pound that nail anymore. But when you look at what is going to be powering some of these major data centers, it's going to be natural gas. So natural gas pricing is going to go way up. And it's also variable, right? Like natural gas pricing is all over the place and to tie it in to most fossil fuel pricing, right? Of like, I can't tell you what a gallon of gas is going to cost in a month or 2 months. But to flip that on its head of going out and building these large scale renewable projects, I can tell you down to the 10th of a penny what electricity is going to cost coming out of a solar farm or that side of it too. So again, when you look at decarbonizing the grid, that's a fancy way to say, hey, we're actually kind of de-risking the grid too. So as we launched this back in 2019, we passed House Bill 411 with some of our partners in Summit County and Salt Lake City. And that created a pathway for communities to follow to get to a very impactful renewable mix. Now, having that discussion with other quote unquote red states, Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, we're talking to them again about working with legislators, finding a legislative fix. And we're talking to both communities and state level legislators. I just spoke to a legislator in New Mexico last week that's talking to Taos as well. We're talking to cities and cities is a loose term depending on where you come from, like Bozeman and Butte and that side of it up in Montana. And there's a couple Idaho communities that are interested too, of saying, hey, instead of us just, you know, trying to tear down the big investor-owned utility in that side of it, of like, hey, the utility's great of maintaining poles, wires, billing, doing stuff that utilities love doing that the average folks don't. But our biggest issue is how can we change that generation side, and truthfully, how can we change it at scale that makes it just as competitive, if not, you know, better kind of pricing for our residences and businesses. So that right there is a great example of even Park City itself couldn't pull that off. So we need to have legal advice, technical advice, legislative advice, modeling, and all this other stuff so that Utah renewable community piece of these potentially 16 communities sharing all these resources, understanding how to actually kind of dive into these very complex power purchase agreements. We're taking the learnings of that and saying, hey, Montana, you want to replicate this too. Here's everything from what the legislation said to the regulatory, you know, the kind of rulemaking side, the state regulator piece, and how communities are diving into inform businesses and residents of how we're going to get there and the options of getting them, the pros and cons of everything. So that's a very major piece, but it also dives down to even smaller levels of, you know, working with ranchers and range to understand how we can improve soil health, which improves water quality, which actually draws down carbon out of the air. But truthfully, that's the side benefit. But it actually is going out and being like, hey, how can we actually work with the ranching community and the range community to improve soil health, which improves water quality, which kind of frees up the water and, again, helps us with these top of watershed issues.
So, Luke, I was able to attend the Climate Solutions Summit in Vail, and you have these each year in different mountain towns. And I'm curious as to what topics you find interesting for this coming year, what we are talking about and dealing with in these mountain towns, and what people can look forward to, because I do understand you make this accessible for everyone after the conference. So can you walk us through what you're tackling this year?
Yeah, definitely. So wildfire is going to be a big one, right? Wildfire and drought is always a big issue. To let folks know, if you just, you know, Google Mountain Towns 2030, mt2030.org, almost every single session at the conference is recorded and put out on YouTube for free, right? The goal is to remove all the barriers on this. One of the benefits is, because we're dealing with mountain towns, we get to host these in beautiful places. We've been in, you know, Park City, we've been in Jackson, Vail, Breckenridge. We're gonna be actually up in the Ketchum area this next fall in October. So wildfire is gonna be a big piece of it. Drought and kind of that resiliency piece. You know, that Ketchum and Haley area had wildfires that directly impacted their towns. So from learning from that of how do we reduce the risk? How do we keep our kind of tourism-based economies thriving through this? But the kind of major underpinning tenet of all this, Claire, and I'm glad you hit on it, is the solution side, right? It's not of, hey, here's a theoretical study of what we can do. It's more of like, hey, here's what Breckenridge did for net zero affordable housing at a place that is, you know, 3,400 feet higher than we are. So every time we hear, oh, it won't work, it's too cold, I'm like, well, gosh, Breckenridge did it, and it's practically Arctic up there. I mean, they have woolly mammoths walking down Main Street. So I think that's the goal, is to focus on these solutions that we can go kind of go touch, see, and feel. The cool thing that's happening in the Ketchum and Haley area is they have six communities that are all working together to share resources up there to say, hey, how can we, again, drive these, solve community issues with this kind of sustainability and climate look, and not in the concept of tonnage reduce or CO2 reduced or anything like that, but hey, we're able to get food waste out of the landfill, or hey, up there, believe it or not, like agricultural waste is a big thing, and how could you tie in, believe it or not, potato farming to help solve some hunger issues up there too. So it'll be fun to go up there and learn. But yeah, wildfire and drought is the definitely the gorilla in the room of understanding, right? If people say, well, hey, there's trees, cut down the trees and make boards out of them and do those other things, it's like that actually gets a really, really expensive, but also B, most of the trees we're cutting down aren't healthy, big, huge standing trees. They're, you know, kind of dog hair stands, it's called, super tight forest stands, or, you know, it's not the healthiest forests. So the thought is, how can we kind of open up these forests to make them healthier, that'll benefit the community, benefit the water quality? And then again, right, that the occurrence, the probability of a wildfire breaking out is low, but that issue is that probability is getting better, right? And then it's just kind of that risk proposition. If it was originally like a 1 in 1,000 chance, now it's a 1 in 100 chance, and then you have this thumb on the scales kind of drought event that crushed the West, that's now clipping it under a 1 in 100 event. You know, it's just a question of where do you really start taking that kind of higher risk issue, and understanding, again, we all have limited resources. We all can't go treat the forest. And also it's just like, hey, everyone across the West can't avoid this. So wildfire is going to be a big one. Energy policy is also a big one too, because, you know, again, everyone's electricity bills are going up. A lot of it's due to the cost of natural gas. If you actually look at your power bill, there's something called the energy balancing account. We're going to get real nerdy here for a second. But the energy balancing account is there to recoup costs of fuels is a major part of it. Coal, natural gas, again, variable cost. That EBA, it's called the Schedule 94 on your bill, has gone up over 20%. So that's a major, major driver. And this is happening, again, across the West. Our grid is a 6-state grid that we tie into. It's Utah, it's Wyoming, it's Idaho, also Washington, Oregon, Northern California. And it's part of a regional grid too. So you start seeing these pieces piece through. And then when you start saying, hey, if folks wanna be able to put solar panels on the roof, or, you know, balcony solar is the new kind of a crazy thing that Utah's actually enabled. What kind of policies can we do to get out of our own way? You know, Park City is actually pretty unique. We actually allow solar panels in our historic district with a few kind of key pieces. So it's sharing that information. It's understanding in states where we can't control our energy code, how can we kind of incentivize things through our building code and that side of it? How can we get smarter about water use, you know, especially exterior water use? How can we make sure things are water-wise, fire-wise, but also protecting our homes too, right? It's an interesting dichotomy in these mountain communities of, we want to increase our urban tree canopy, right, to make sure it's not hot standing on the streets, but we want to decrease our kind of wildlands canopy where we have potential wildfire issues too. So finding that balance is a ever-changing goal too. So that'll be more discussions as well. And again, it's a lot of the focus is internally, right? Hey, this community has already done these things, or this is what they've learned. Or truthfully, it's sometimes saying, hey, this community tried this thing, it didn't work, and here's why. So again, I can learn it. So I don't have to go out to do a similar RFP to get a similar result, when I can be like, hey, Ketchum, what'd you do in this? What'd you learn? And then we also bring in kind of external speakers that can kind of hit sing to the larger audience. And last year we had Mark Jacobson, who he does a really interesting post on his X and LinkedIn of kind of wind, water, and solar. His point is just like, this energy crisis, we truly have the solutions, and they truly are cheaper. We've also had the major hitters like a Bill McKibben and that side of it too. So the kind of that inspirational side. But again, the goal is to walk out of there being like, hey, I learned X, Y, and Z from these communities. I can share the workshop that folks did to really truly say, wow, that's, hey, I can now call the Jakes, the Jessies, the Kristens, the peers out there that, again, aren't always a sustainability professional. They might be a town council member that's excited about this. They might be their public works director. Like, these are great things to learn from. Like Johnny Zeem, who's up in Jackson, he's their acting public works director right now. He's doing some amazing stuff to just, again, learn from what they're doing, so I can say, well, I think it's going to cost this, or I'm going to go rip another study that in 3 years we'll have another study on top. It's like, no, here's what 4 peer communities did. This is what it cost them. This makes sense to implement in our community.
Park City's been a leader on some of these topics you've been talking about, in particular on net zero for carbon emissions. Can you talk to me a little bit about what Park City's goals are, and how is Park City doing in achieving those really ambitious goals?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thanks for asking, Seth. So one thing I do want to do is take a little step back on, you know, I could sit here and tell you what Park City's carbon footprint is on a community-wide basis, but again, I could tell you it's 8,000, 800,000, or 8 million tons, and most people would be like, yeah, sounds great. Easiest way to do it is, if you look at what the carbon footprint is based off of, it's a lot of it's energy-driven. So you look at coal to make electrons to power our streetlights and you know, businesses and lights at home. Or you can view it as the fossil fuel side that, you know, how are vehicles getting out too? So, but all of those things actually have an economic value too, right? Gallon of gas, ton of coal, like we can actually research all that, MMBTU of natural gas. So again, to step away from the tons of carbon piece, when you view it as what is Park City's quote unquote economy, economic spend on these kind of fossil fuels, it's about $300 million a year to support our economy. And that's both getting kind of people's goods and services within our community, right? Heating our homes, turning on the lights, but also getting folks here on airplanes or getting, you know, the workers here to, again, flip the burgers or you know, teach the ski lesson on that side of it too. So when people always say, well, how are you gonna pay for this transition? It's like, goodness, we're already spending $300 million. That's a lot of money. And we're just trying to shift that to more kind of regional and de-risking that side, right? Of again, renewables are just going to be stable over the next few decades. So when we start looking at that, imagine if we could take out of that $300 million, and let's say we can capture 20% of that regionally, you know, and that's through efficiency, right? Of just making our transportation system more efficient, or, you know, just on that efficiency side, if we can capture 20% of that back in our economy, that's equivalent to opening another ski resort. So again, if we could capture $60 million a year and put it back in the pockets of everyone who kind of lives and works and breathes around here, that is a huge, huge win. So that's how we're looking at the transition. The biggest thing we're focused on right now is that Utah Renewable Communities piece. Our council just passed it, as did Summit County, and Oakley did, you know, Salt Lake City did, like there's a whole list. So if you look at Utah Renewable Communities, what the big thing folks are going to start seeing here in the next few months is they're going to get two different notices to say, hey, this is an opt-out program. So if you don't want to be a part of the Utah Renewable Communities piece, here's a way to opt out. And there's a lot of process. And again, not to mire folks down in the wonders of public service rulings and all this other stuff. But long story short, you're going to have the opportunity to join this piece. And that will be a major, major part. Once we know how many folks, residences, and businesses are going to participate, we actually also have an RFP going on right now to procure major, major renewables as well. So as we drive that forward, that is a way that you can kind of vote with your dollars and say, hey, utilities, we want to really focus on this and change that generation side. So that's going to be a major piece for folks to understand. And the electricity is kind of the underpinning of our economy, because if we get a clean grid, the cool thing is then we can get a renewable grid as well. So then if you have a fully electric home or a fully electric business that is supplied by clean renewable energy, hey, congratulations, you're a lot further there. The other thing you're seeing is, you know, people always ask about EVs and that side of it. You know, the city has 45 free EV chargers, also is a part of our code for all major developments. They have to be either EV ready or have EV chargers in. That's a great clean way to do it. But I think the other thing too is the, you know, when you look at the e-bike side of it, you know, again, we hear grumbling about it all the time of those pesky teenagers ripping around on their Surons and that side of it. The state did give us more ability to regulate those. But truthfully, we're starting to see the e-bike side replace cars, which is a pretty wild thing to see. We're seeing that active transportation actually kick in. It's a major part of what my the other side of my job does. And places like the Poison Creek Trail, it sees higher traffic than Lower Park Avenue does. So again, we're starting to see these transitions move ahead. But the cool thing is with the Utah Renewable Communities piece rolling, and then all the other areas we're looking at, including stretch codes and all this other stuff, we're on our way, and we're making some great headway to get us to that kind of better future.
Well, Luke Carton, we appreciate you coming on and talking to us a little bit more about Mountain Towns 2030, your objectives, and what is coming up this year. If people want to learn more, what is the website that they should go to?
Just go to mt2030.org. There is a elevations report, which kind of aggregates climate news from around the West. And then, like I said, they have a YouTube channel with literally every single session that we've ever been able to record, recorded and free for people to check out.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for being a part of this Green Earth today.
Thank you so much.